This guy bailed me out. Actually, I think I was there in the room the night he came back around this place for a while, and it was really different because I've known him over the years in a different facet before this whole AA thing, just to see what kind of change had happened. So I think we're going to be really happy with what you see and what you hear tonight. Please put your hands together and welcome Ryan G. from Carey Commission.
My name is Ryan, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 10-2-2009. It's like a two-parter, though. That's the day I decided to stop drinking. It took me a long time to actually get sober. I didn't really start to gain any kind of emotional sobriety until probably June of 2025. So that was a pretty substantial dry drunk on my behalf. Trying to do it on my own. I guess I'll start from the beginning. I grew up normal two-parent household. My parents got sober when I was really young, so I grew up in the rooms of AA. You would think that'd be enough, though, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. Coming to meetings now, running into people that remember me when I was not 6'5". You know, I didn't do a lot of underage drinking. You know, coming from a, you know, parents that were recovering alcoholics and addicts, I was kind of anti-drugs and alcohol until I wasn't. One of the only times I remember drinking anything at a young age, me and my sister snagged a wine cooler from my grandparents' garage. I got through about half a sip of that, and I was like, nah, it's not for me. I really didn't do any drinking of substance till I was in my late teens. And even then, like, from the first point, I drank and got drunk, and I liked the way it felt. I remember the first time I ever got drunk, we were playing drinking games with a bunch of volunteer firefighters, and my drink of choice that night happened to be Goldschlager, because that's all I could, that's all I had. So started off on the wrong foot for sure. I did, you know, I would drink in excess on occasion when I could get it. I never had a fake ID. I never frequented bars. I didn't really become an alcoholic degenerate till I turned 21. So, I remember it was funny because I never liked beer. I never liked beer even after I started drinking. I just wasn't going to be the only guy at a bar ordering a Zima. So I remember force feeding myself beer till I could stomach it right after I turned 21 because I wasn't going to be that guy. And then that became pretty much the nightly scene for me. It was always, you know, happy hour led to 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't ever remember a time where I said, I'm going to go out and have a drink and go home. Like that was never the goal for me. Like I drank to have a good time and I drank to get drunk. Like that was what I thought you did. That led to a lot of run-ins with the law. I probably had my first DUI by 22. That wasn't enough. Second DUI by 24. Between those two times, I had already gained quite a tolerance for alcohol. I could drink a lot. Most of my nights out were people that thought they could keep up with me, and that wasn't the case. And then probably around 24, 25, that's when things got really wild. A friend of mine introduced me to this little white powder that lets you hit the reset button when you sniff it. So that was really bad, because that my drinking just exploded after that, because I could drink twice as much. And I found out that if you concocted them in the right way, you could maintain for days at a time before you needed to take a break. That led to just a lot of financial troubles. You know, I didn't really think I was hurting anybody else but myself, but, you know, the people around me, my parents especially, I know that my drinking caused a lot of rifts in that household because I was mama's boy. So, you know, she was always there to save me when I needed saving. Had gone out of town for work, probably 2008. Caught my third DUI in Baltimore. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced the amenities of central bookings in Baltimore, but I highly don't recommend it. that was a pretty frightening experience, and that still wasn't enough. Not going too much into the drunkalogue. New Year's Eve, 04 to 05, blacked out at the steering wheel on High Street, flipped a vehicle, ran away from the scene. My higher power kept me coherent enough that I was able to grab the booze and the drugs from the car and run away. That wasn't enough. Just looking back, there were nights I felt like I kind of had a golden horseshoe. Because I got out of way more trouble than I ever got into. So, you know, I had always, just talking about the whole higher power thing, I always knew I had a higher power, because I didn't get through those things because I was so good at being a drunk driver or so good at being an alcoholic. Like, something got me through that. Something thought that I needed needed to keep going. Fast forward to 2009, caught my third DUI in Virginia, which was a felony. So that was fun. And you would think that would have been enough. Like looking back, it's funny because I'm at a place now where I look back at what happened the way I thought it happened, and like actually being coherent and being able to go through these inventories and figure out things that I've done, how it really happened. Like, when I was given the option to either stay in jail or go to treatment, obviously that's a no-brainer. I mean, I'd much rather wear street clothes in a rehab than an orange jumpsuit in jail. Because I don't know if any of you have ever experienced Virginia Beach's amenities, but if you don't have on white underwear, you don't get to wear any. So it's just like an orange jumpsuit. That was no fun. But my whole thought process in between, it was like a, I don't know, it was a 6-7 hour ride from Virginia Beach to Winchester. I ended up in Edge Hill Recovery Center, which I always have a place in my heart for that place, because it definitely helped to save my life. My thought was, I'm going to do their dog and pony show, and I'm going to go back to doing what I was doing. Because even at that point, I still, you know, I'm probably running my life into the shitter, but I was having a great time doing it. Because, like, I ended at the point where I still associated alcohol with having a good time. Like, I did not make it to the point where I drank alone. Like, I was an outgoing, I wanted to be at the party, I wanted to be the life of the party, and that's how I thought I was. You know, hear stories of our drinking after the fact, and I was pretty obnoxious, but never violent, so it was okay, I guess. But I don't know, somewhere in the treatment center, like, you know, I remember I had those thoughts, and I'm just one. I always try to use humor as a diffuser for any situation. I think laughter can mask a lot of things. So I was always like the comic relief. And one of the directors, his name was Jerry, and I remember, because, you know, we would go to these class. I mean, you know, treatment centers are a lot of meetings and classes and. You know, that particular treatment center, you did a 90-90 whether you wanted to or not. Like, you went to a meeting in the morning, then you had breakfast, then you had class, then you had a meeting at lunch before lunch, then class, then some free time, then a meeting, and then a little bit of free time before they lights out at 10 o'clock. But I remember hearing him talk in these classes. I was somewhat paying attention And he always talked about the flying dildo of consequences. That stuck out to me. But he kind of pulled me he pulled me to the side and you know, he's like, come on, let's go have a chat. And he was like, what's up with you, man? He's like, you've been laughing and giggling for 2 weeks, and now all of a sudden it's just like, I don't know, you look like your dog died. So I just kind of explained to him where I was at. You know, these people were coming into these meetings because the treatment center actually held a noon meeting that outsiders, it was just a normal, I can't remember if it was an NA or AA, but it was just a normal meeting that, like we all, like this. They didn't have court cases, and they weren't worried about their cars being repossessed and, you know, house foreclosures and custody battles. And I talked to him about it, and he's like, so what are you going to do? And I'm like, I thought that was your job. Like, you're supposed to tell me. Like, I don't know nothing. So he's like, here's what you do. He's like, give it 90 days our way. He's like, if your life doesn't get better, he's like, screw it. Go back to doing what you were doing. And I can't say my life didn't get better. It definitely, you know, because you take the alcohol away, and then we get that pink cloud. And I rode that till the wheels fell off, for sure. I did my stint in Edge Hill, and then I did live in an Oxford house in Winchester for an additional 5 months. And I went to a lot of meetings. And I say that because I only went to meetings because there was nothing else to do, because I was in Winchester, Virginia. It was, it's a recovery town, so there's a lot of recovery, but with that, it also comes a lot of, I guess, predators towards that. There was a lot of drugs and alcohol as well. Thankfully, I had parents that sold anything I had of value for me, so I had a little bit of money to live off of while I was there. I didn't have to get a job while I was doing that, so that was nice. I would have been washing dishes in a restaurant because that's about all there was. I'm not really the customer service type, I don't think. I don't know that I'd fare well in the restaurant industry. So I did that, and I went to a lot of meetings, and I did get a sponsor while I was up there. And this is where part of my story, how I thought it went and how it really went. I felt like I had started to kind of open up to that guy. I still kind of had reservations about the whole thing. Like, I had come to the point where I knew that me and alcohol were not a good combination. Like, me, drugs, and alcohol don't mix. I couldn't drink and not drive. I couldn't drink and not ruin my life. Like, this is all stuff we read all the time. We don't drink and use drugs like normal people. Like, we don't. We're alcoholics. But I don't know. I had reservations about the whole step process and everything else. I mean, I've been given multiple big books. I don't really think I even cracked one open until June of this year. I would thumb through it, and I don't know. I feel like, for me, the obsession to drink alcohol went away very quickly. Like, it was, by the time I had come home from Winchester, I didn't think about drinking, even to this day. Like, it was just never had cravings, maybe a handful of times. I was like, oh, it's a nice day out, happy hour, but then just, like, you know, play that tape through. That happy hour turns into jail for me. But looking back, he could probably, so I feel like I started to open up, and then the guy just stopped responding. So that I got filled up with a lot of spite with that. I was like, you know what, I can do this on my own. Like, I truly thought that I could. And I did for a long time, so I thought. So came home, would go to meetings here and there. I mean, I went years in between meetings, and like I said, I rode the pink cloud. Like I said, life did get better. Things got easier. There was never, you know, I didn't have to worry about police harassing me. And now keep in mind, like my first few DUIs, I didn't follow the rules. Like I still drove, I still did whatever I was going to do. Like I drank and drove. The last one, there was no, you know, this was kind of a, I guess, kind of a God thing. There was no fancy lawyer. It was a public defender. You know, I ended up with state mandatory minimum. I did 90 days in jail, convicted felon, you know. But through all that, like, I stopped drinking, and I started to try to do better things. You know, it was funny because I remember meeting with my probation officer. They transferred my case to Chesapeake because that's where I happened to live. And about 2 months in, this lady, she's like, I don't know what to do with you. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, you're following the rules. She's like, most of my people have hung themselves by the noose by now. Like, I'm like, sorry? Like, so she fought to get me off of probation early. You know, the things that normal people get were coming to fruition. Keep in mind, I still had no sense of spirituality. I did grow up pretty religious. I went to, you know, christened as a Catholic, first communion, went to Catholic preschool, Christian high school. And I will say I've learned far more about spirituality and connection with God in rooms full of drunks than I ever learned from religious professionals. I've definitely drawn a very big difference between religion and spirituality. Like, you know, I don't have to go to church to talk to God. I have to come in here to gain any kind of spiritual enlightenment, you know, to enhance my spiritual connection. I've got to be around you guys and in these rooms and in this literature. Sorry, I didn't take notes. I just gave this one to God. So this is the outcome. Where was I going with that? So came home, got back into life, started working again. I'll add a little caveat to that. Through my drinking and drugging, I pissed away a pretty lucrative career as a longshoreman. That kind of went away. So I did lose some things, but I mean, at that point I hadn't lost enough that I was done until I got into the rehab. And even, like I said, even after that, like, I just knew I wasn't going to drink anymore. Years after that is when stuff started to get bad. I mean, keep in mind, like, I never remember feeling the misery that I felt when I finally crash landed at the scout cabin in June of 2005. That I never remember feeling any of that drinking, like, through my whole drink. Like, you know, I'd have those moments of, oh, I'm never doing this again, until 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I'm doing it again. You know, God, get me out of this one. I'll never do it again until I'm doing it again. And it's funny, my man Willie, he always adds that word patient to cunning, baffling, and powerful, because that was true for me. Like, my alcoholism was really patient. It took a long time before it really brought me to a point of desperation. You know, I came back, was in the process of my first divorce at that point. Got through that, got married again, had another child. But I still had those addictive tendencies that I had never dealt with. I had never really got any kind of recovery. So, you know, being an addict, just another thing I've heard in the meetings, I'm addicted to things that make me feel good. Be it drugs, alcohol, women, fitness. There was even a point in time in my life where, you know, I was addicted to making your day worse because I felt like shit about myself. Like, that was what I did for quite a few years. It's funny because, you know, I got into the book with with my sponsor and started going through these steps, and you guys really hoodwinked me in step four. It's like, you know, it's like you write down all the things that they did to you. Hell yeah. Pen to paper, baby. And then, you know, you make these categories and these lists, and then it's like, now cover them up. What? I'm the problem? No. So it was an eye opener, but you know, I hear stories of people who come in and say, "Oh yeah, I'll do one." What, you just pick and choose. You can't pick and choose the steps. Like they're in order for a reason, and I'm finding that out as I come through, you know, working through step 10 now. You definitely have to do them in order, for sure. But just through that, like I pretty much shit on everybody that ever came into my life. Like, you know, I used people, women especially, you know, had severe issues with like validation. And it was never my fault. Like I'd become like a master manipulator. I could manipulate my ways in and out of things. And that was the point that the pink cloud had disappeared, and I was running my program off of white knuckle and spite. Never drank, never thought about drinking, but you know, all the rest of the addictive stuff was there. Like I latched on to fitness, and I latched on to whatever, social media attention. You know, I remember points in time where I would, you know, what they call them, thirst traps, post a little picture and just wait for the reactions. And it was the feeling was no different than when we would get to the bar or the candy man would answer the phone. Like it was same feeling. So I had that same dopamine release. And finally I had gotten into call it a relationship where all of the crap that I had put out into the world was thrown back in my face. And that is when it switched from white knuckle and spite to pretty much misery and desperation. You know, like I said, you go through these inventories and you figure out a lot about yourself. I thought I'd become an introvert. I just didn't want to be around people. No. I was an asshole and nobody wanted to be around me. Like, you know, it's funny. Like I had thought I came back into the rooms and I was like, man, I just don't even know. Like my story seems kind of boring, but it's like the story that I thought I had and versus what really happened is so wild. Like going through these steps has been the most eye-opening experience of my life. Like, you know, I came to a meeting, pretty sure it was a Thursday night meeting, probably June 26th-ish. And my man Joe, he starts the meetings off sharing just where he's at. And I remember he shared about an experience in his life and the way he handled it. And that's what I wanted. Like, I don't know. I wanted that place of operating with nothing but like positivity and love. And I'm probably going to get emotional because I have a lot of years of burying all that shit. So they're still kind of unregulated. So I just remember telling him one point, it's like, I was just in my car in the morning, just like bawling my eyes out. And I don't even remember what for, like, you know, coming into these steps and then, you know, doing that third step. That was the first time doing the third step, getting on my knees with another person and doing that was the first time I like felt a connection with God. Like, I mean, I knew he was there, but like my sick, twisted mind, my connection with God was I gave my life to Christ. I got to get out of jail free card. I can do and say whatever I want and go to heaven. Doesn't matter. Like, how sick is that, right? But doing that was like, that was the moment that I truly felt like there was a process to never have to live that way again. Like I don't have to live that way, act that way, or feel that way ever again unless I want to. And that's pretty powerful. Like that, that's a game changer. It has changed a lot of things for me. I've let a lot of things slip away that used to be important to me. Just, I don't know. Like it says, we lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Like, I don't care so much about keeping up with the Joneses and vanity and all that stuff. Like, I wake up every day and hit my knees and with the main goal of being a better person and helping other people. Like, getting outside of myself, because I was extremely selfish. Like, for as long as I can remember, like, it was always about me. Can't say I wouldn't help you move, but it was just so I could say, hey, look, I helped him move. So, you know, you think, oh, he's a stand-up guy, where probably stabbing somebody in the back behind the scenes. I don't know, it's so nice to not have to live that way anymore. Just so many of the things that I did, you know, trying to go through the process of making amends for that, but like coming through 4 and 5, that's some freedom with that stuff. Like, you know, you get all that, like, That stuff happened, but from that point, ain't nobody got shit on me. I don't have to hide my phone. I don't have to lie. You know, I don't have to do any of that stuff. And it's funny, like, I look back at that, playing God was exhausting. Like, that was very, God, just looking back, like, you know, you got to work to buy party favors. You got to lie. Then you got to convince yourself of the lie. Then you got to convince your friend to lie. Then it's like, so now not only are you a liar, you've turned your friend into a liar. Because, like, you know, if you're my best friend, my bullshit's your bullshit, and your bullshit's my bullshit. So, like, you got a bro code, right? It's just, this is kind of getting all over the place. It's my first speaking engagement ever. Was never big on public speaking. Unless it was taking somebody else's inventory, I could do that vocally. But you know, just coming in, and I felt like when I got back, because it was, I thought I had it, right? I hadn't had a drink in over 15 years. I thought I had it. And, you know, I was thinking, man, maybe I should just go to maybe therapy. Like, I'm not drinking. Like, I got that part. And then it was more than one occasion. My loving mother would tell me, maybe you should work a program. Maybe that'll help. Just a suggestion. How true that was. Because, like I said, when I crash landed to that scout cabin, I was done. I was emotionally, physically, mentally, I was done. Like, I was surviving. I wasn't living. I was just like, I don't know. I feel like I was just a shell that was going through the motions. Like, I had no real concept of loving or being loved. I think the only, you know, my saving grace was I hadn't had a drink, so I was, like, I wasn't fighting that obsession and trying to gain any emotional sobriety, so I hit the ground running. Like, I think probably within the first month, I had a service position, chairing meetings, you know, just getting outside of myself. And it's been great. Like, you know, the scout cabin is... That's home base for me. It's been said time and time again, there's magic in that place, and I find that to be true. You know, I owe a lot to my sponsor and to all the other folks that frequent that place. And, you know, other meetings too, because, you know, that's home base for me, but I like to get out and hear different stories everywhere I go. You know, all it's like any situation in life, this program can help. With whatever it might be. Be it you need to be at a meeting because you're feeling down, you got to call somebody, pick up a book. You know, was we were talking about that at the meeting last night. This kit of spiritual tools we have, that's an alcoholic Swiss Army knife. Like I feel like if you're doing this thing, that's a fix-all for everything, for anything that could go wrong in your life. We've got a tool for that. We've got a step for that. It's just my life has changed so much in the last 6-7 months. I got here, and there was no way you could have convinced me that prayer worked. How wrong that I was proven on that, because like I said, prayers work. You just got to be willing to do the work and to ask what to do, and then be willing to do it, as long as it's not what you want. It's been a lot of discomfort for me in the last 6 months. You know, that chaos was my comfort zone for a long time. Like, I don't know, I feel like my life was just, you know, it was like a, kind of like a duck on a pond. Like, it kind of looked okay up here, but down there it's just like going all over the place. I feel like that was life for a while, because I thought I managed well. I'm sure people that knew. You know, I got here and didn't know what was wrong with me, but you guys did. It didn't take you long. To figure out that I had not done any of the work. I don't know. I feel like this would be more climactic, but that's where I'm at today. I don't know, I came in there and I hit the ground running, and the biggest, I remember a meeting a few weeks ago that was talking about the gifts of sobriety. And I think one of the biggest gifts for me is just like my mindset when I wake up. Because for a lot of years, waking up for me was like, fuck, here we go. Like, what do I have to do today? And now it's like, I'm excited to get up because there's a list of things that I get to do. You know, I get to talk to my higher power. I get to get outside of myself. I get to work out. I get to spend time with my family, you know, friends. That's another thing I've learned in AA. People are actually dependable. You know, because I'm sure it had something to do with the fact that I had pretty much run the gamut on most everybody in my life, but it was a point I felt like one of the few people I could depend on was myself. I mean, obviously mom and dad were always there for me, but, you know, sometimes they're just not available. Like, you come into these rooms and you get in this network. People don't slap your hand away. People don't send your calls to voicemail. You know, people don't not answer your questions. People don't not give you a hug if you pick up a chip. Like, it's crazy. Like, this whole fellowship is just mind-blowing to me, the effect that it can have on an alcoholic's life. Like, it is so freeing knowing that just coming into these rooms and being connected with you guys, it'll save your whole, it'll change your whole life. Like, I truly have felt that. Like, my life has changed dramatically for the better for me, betterment of myself and the people around me. Because, like I said, I don't know, like, looking back at that, I wasn't a good dude. I remember through my course of that 15 years, like when I was in the pink cloud phase. People were like, oh man, you're not drinking, you're doing so good. And I'm like, yeah, go me. And then during the spite phase, it was kind of like, yeah, whatever. And then towards the end, I would get an accolade like that. I'm thinking to myself, you have no clue the misery going on inside my head right now. Like, I don't know. I stopped trying to think why, you know, because it's what when I tell people that haven't heard my story that I stayed sober so long without working a program, they're like, how did you do that? Like, how did you do that and not blow your head off? God, that's I think there was a reason for that. Maybe I just needed to get miserable enough without having a desire to numb it. I don't know. I stopped trying to rationalize that, because that's the only explanation I have, is my higher power that I call God. Because towards the end, I wasn't to the point I was ready to off myself, but I definitely sometimes prayed that I just wouldn't wake up. I figured that'd just be easier. And now, like I said, I wake up every day with this list of shit that I get to do. You know, doing this, I never thought I'd be doing this. I never thought anything I would have to say could make a difference. And Mike told me I had to be sober by 8:30. I did it. So I hope that I said something that could have inspired somebody. More will be revealed. Like I said, I'm not completely through the steps yet, but we will see what happens. And I'm sure, like with most people, I'm going to go through them over and over and over again. I don't feel that any of this is a one-time process. I feel like this is a lifelong endeavor for me. Like, I don't want to ever have that feeling of I got it again, because I didn't have nothing. Like, without this, I don't ever want to go back to that. So if it means getting uncomfortable talking in front of a room full of people, or figuring out where I was the problem, I will do that 100 times over, because this way is a lot easier than that way. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that very much, for sharing your story. I,